I'll call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. We want to welcome back Representative Benson. So, Representative Benson, have you read the minutes? You weren't here, but we'll count on you having read them anyway.
Anywhere I can be, I try to read these minutes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the minutes and what's the last part? The phrase I need. Just move the minutes? Okay. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Moves the minutes of March 3rd. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes, motion prevails, the minutes are approved. Representative Garofalo wishes to be recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benson, welcome back. I just wanted to check, is everything cool and you're okay and everything's fine and dandy?
I'm going to be here. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
He's back. He's going to be fine. No special election. No, I'm not going to run him off the road on the way home. No, he's okay. No, I'm just kidding. It's glad we missed you, and it's good to have you back.
You're a real gentleman, and I'll be here to bother you for at least another year and a half.
Count on both of you being here to bother all of us. Especially today. Mr. Strom is going to go through. We have members a day of transportation bill, starting with Representative Nornes's. And Representative Nornes, you and your any testifier you might have to come to the table, and while you're doing that, Mr. Strom has in our packets a transportation brief that will help us kind of put these bills into context. So maybe, Mr. Strom, you could just say a word or two about the memo that you and Matt Duress wrote up last December.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. There's a short information brief entitled School Bus Transportation in your packet, and just a couple of reasons for this to be here today. School buses are categorized both by size and use, and there's some charts starting on page 2 of this document that'll help you as the discussion talks about different kinds of buses and what kind of criteria they have on them. And then toward the end of the document, there's a brief discussion on the current equipment standards, including those of seat belts, which start on page 11 of that document.
And Mr. Strom, on page 2, when we're always hearing all about type 3 buses this time, and that's just an award bill another day, but is one of these pictures a type 3 bus?
Madam Chair,
oh, there at the bottom, I see it.
At the bottom there, the type 3s are essentially classified by the use, which makes them, instead of being an ordinary automobile, a type 3 vehicle, and then they need to meet certain standards that the law requires for type 3 buses.
Very good. I was looking for a 3, and it's Roman numeral 3.
Yes.
So it's very helpful to have this, so thank you very much. I remember looking at it in December when this was an issue and we were all hearing about type 3 buses. It was helpful then, it's helpful now. Representative Nornes, welcome to the committee.
And thank you, Madam Chair.
Would you like me to move your bill or did you ask someone else to move it?
I have not done that. So
okay, well then I will move for Representative Nornes, House File 331. And Representative Nornes, you have two amendments. The one is the A1 amendment. And what one is this? What does that do, Rep. Nornes?
The A1 amendment, that changes, the bill made a reference, the original bill made a reference to transporting students to and from school, and that language, I'm told, kind of indicated that would be made it a school bus. And my bill is not intended to affect school buses.
So
we're deleting that. In that amendment.
A technical amendment then. I'll move the 80331 A1 amendment, and based on that explanation, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. A090079. I will move that amendment for Representative Nornes. And Representative Nornes, what does this one do?
Madam Chair and members, the bill originally, I think, was thinking that we would be retrofitting motor coaches with seat belts, but again, on further advice and some expert input, it's been determined that we need to make that change on new manufactured buses and not retrofitting old ones. So this basically clarifies that this applies then to a coach manufactured after July 1st of 2012. Doesn't preclude a manufacturer or a company ordering that feature on a new bus they ordered now, but by 2012 it would be required.
So a little lead time makes things easier around here.
That's right. Yeah.
Very good. Okay.
So with that.
So any, we'll vote on this amendment.
Oh, that's right.
Any discussion on the amendment or any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And then I guess I moved that and it's for possible, House File 331 is for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So Representative Nornes, it's all yours.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I will make this. Oh, I'm sorry.
Like I said earlier. Members,
I disrespect to all of your members.
Representative Nornes and members, I was telling Representative Garofalo earlier today, I had a chance to go and visit a second grade classroom at the Museum Magnet School in St. Paul and read them a story, and afterwards I got all kinds of hugs. It was the kind of day we should all have occasionally. But there were two students that both needed time out, and they could not listen to the story without having to go in the back of the room, according to their teacher. So there's a couple in every class.
Okay.
But Representative
Nornes,
I'll try
not to stare at those people. So. Madam Chair and members, the witnesses that I would have with me today were unable to be here. The family that really is the inspiration behind this legislation. If you don't mind, I would like to just read just a little bit of the letter that they sent. I think all of you have a copy of it, but it kind of tells the story as to why we're here and what led us up to potentially passing House File 331. Our names are Kim and Stacy Wesher. 5 people, our lives were shattered on a Saturday morning when the phone rang at 6:15 a.m. It was a friend of ours calling to tell us that the motor coach their daughter was riding on had tipped over on the way home from Chicago near Albertville, Minnesota. The next few hours were still a blur to us, but finding out that our daughter was the only fatality on the bus was excruciatingly devastating. That's basically the story. The bus left I-94 and tipped over, and Jessica was thrown out of the bus and was the only fatality. The family has since then contacted me and felt very strongly that there are seatbelts in airplanes, there are seatbelts in cars, there are seatbelts in carnival rides, there are seatbelts nearly everywhere today, but the one place they're absent is in motor coaches, except for the driver. The drivers must wear a seatbelt. The family also said that she had just passed her driver's test and was adamant about wearing a seatbelt. And had she had a seatbelt, they're convinced that she would not have been a fatality. So that brings us to the legislation we're looking at today. And it has kind of evolved from the beginning where they felt we needed to do this on all motor coaches to transported students to where it apparently is, as a compromise, applying only to motor coaches transporting students, but is applying to new motor coaches that are purchased and have them properly installed and right from the factory. The bill right now would be, again, taking effect as of July 1 of 2012. And so I believe we have the at least the unofficial support of everyone, including law enforcement and and bus companies themselves. If they'd care to testify, they sure can do that. But we have worked with them to come up with the language that we're looking at today.
Thank you very much. And I see by our bill brief that the federal government for school buses does require that school buses have to have the lap and shoulder belt assembly.
By that same date.
Oh, according to Mr. Strom, just the small A1s. I guess
right.
That we need to go back to that picture chart and
right.
See which ones.
Madam Chair.
The top picture. Okay, the type A on page 2, the one at the top, only that type has to have the belt. Okay.
Yeah. Madam Chair,
Representative Nornes.
the people that I've talked to within the industry believe that that's the direction even the full-size school buses are going. So eventually that, but there are other issues with the school buses because of the size of the students and the ages of them and so forth, keeping them safe. That's a whole different situation. So, well, with the motor coach we're talking about generally, buses taking athletes. We had four buses that went to the inaugural festivities from Fergus Falls this winter, and you know, you expect them to be safe and arrive back home. So, and in most cases, they have a very good safety record, I must add. But there are times, the example I shared, where that wasn't the outcome. So.
And a very tragic outcome. And we have had initiatives to have this sort of thing discussed at different times since I've been in the legislature, and we've just kind of resisted it due to the cost, but then every time we get our eyes open one more time,
right,
it's considered again. So thank you for bringing this forward. Are there questions from members?
I know.
Representative McFarland.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nornes, we have a letter here from Lorenz Bus Service. Do your amendments address their concerns?
We have talked to them this afternoon, and I believe they are in the audience. If they care to comment, they sure can. I think they're satisfied with the amendments that we passed.
And Representative McFarland, they are on the list to testify.
Okay.
So we all get to.
And my other question is, Madam Chair, it says a school motor coach. So are we talking motor coaches that are contracted to school districts in this case?
Representative Nornes.
That would be, yes, my understanding, that not owned by the school but contracted for specific purposes, for example, trips, bus trips to the athletic events.
And Mr. Strom would like to follow up as well.
And Madam Chair, there is a statute that prohibits school districts from owning and operating motor coaches. So the only way that students can use them for student-related activities is to contract with the provider of those services.
Madam Chair, my follow-up would be then, so a motor coach company wouldn't necessarily have to have their whole fleet be retrofitted with, or fitted with seat belts, if they, only the ones that were being contracted out?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, the way that the bill is defined, on the second page of the bill, there's a definition especially for this subdivision that's defined as school motor coach, and basically uses the definition of the things that make a motor coach, but then says that it's used for school-related activities. So it would only be the buses that are used for those purposes that would fit that definition.
Okay, then we have Representative Depke, Tilbury, Ward, and Bell. Representative Depke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nornes, I just wanted a clarification on page 2 of the summary. We're just talking about the Type A vehicles. It kind of parallels with Representative McFarland's question, but are we talking about just Type A? Did I hear you correctly on that?
Representative Nornes.
Just Type A is a motor coach, yes.
Madam Chair, Representative Jepke, the type of vehicle we're talking about for House File 331 is would look like a large motor coach bus. It's not one of the ones pictured here. It looks like the kind you'd expect that Greyhound or a private company would use for transporting people on a charter trip. It's a full size school bus, and the definition in House File, the full size bus, the definition in Representative Nornes' bill of school motor coach describes how that vehicle looks.
Representative,
thank you very much. I do have one other question. Is there a fiscal note on this bill as well?
Representative Nornes.
There is none. I don't believe there's any cost to the state of Minnesota. In fact, I know there isn't.
Our staff indicates that that is correct.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nornes, with what you've described, especially in this particular accident, it seems like there was like a special trip or something that was in going on, and there probably were chaperones and things like that on the bus. Is that kind of the types of things that you're looking
right
for? Because I can just imagine the driver trying to be responsible for all students, getting them off the bus in case of an emergency, and being a former driver of a school bus when I was going in college and so on, I can see a lot of difficulty with this on the driver.
Yes. And I understand that, Madam Chair. And this particular trip The band from Pelican Rapids had participated in competition in Chicago, and they were simply returning to Pelican Rapids. One of the things that schools have is scheduling problems, also financial problems, and so their intention was to drive all night to return back to Pelican Rapids. And the accident happened early that morning. Just a side note, sometimes even though it's a tragedy, the Albertville emergency responders were getting ready for an exercise at that very moment that morning. And so they were there within seconds, which really prevented other serious accidents or injuries from being more severe. So, but that's what we're looking at. And there are other issues dealing with, one of the things we talked about is making it a requirement to have two drivers on some of these trips. And right now, that's not a requirement.
Representative Gilbert, a follow-up?
Yeah, a follow-up would be, I think if it goes past certain hours as far as a charter, as far as someone that's driving a charter, I would think that they still would have to have two drivers based on the over-the-road licensing and so on, because they have logbooks to fill out and they have 8-hour shifts and that kind of thing.
Right.
I think it already exists.
That is true. And I believe there are perhaps people in the audience that could be more specific on what that requirement is now.
And Madam Chair, one thing I wanted to say is I think you're making a distinction between like special trips versus every single day type trip for buses. Is that correct?
That would be true. There are a lot of athletic teams that use motor coaches because they travel great distances these days, so that would be a use, but not every day. That's why we amended out that reference to to and from school.
And Representative Tilbury's staff is telling me that the school districts are prohibited from using these types of buses for everyday things. So, and then if it's a trip like Representative Nornes is describing, there's usually the coach or volunteer parents, and so these types of trips, at least, there is some help.
There are chaperones on the
right. Yeah.
And Madam Chair, and I'm understanding that, but the comment was made that it was going to move in the direction of all buses, and then the correction was made that it was only A1 buses, and I just want to make sure that that's clear.
Representative Nornes, I think, was talking about the future, but his bill is concrete, Representative Nornes.
Yeah, I think I was just sharing some information that some in the industry have shared with me. That this bill doesn't take us in that direction.
All right, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a technical question, Representative Nornes. As I read the letter that Representative McFarland talked about from Lorenz Buffing, it didn't appear that retrofitting old buses was a sound investment or whatever. So, new bill talks about the effective date of the section is July 1, 2012, but the amendment talks about coach manufactured after July 1 of 2012. Is that a problem? Is that, are those dates? To me, that's, if it's effective July 1, 2012, but you don't have any buses manufactured yet, I'm just asking if it's a technical problem.
Well, it would be, as I understand it, any buses that are manufactured after that date when this becomes effective. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair.
Yeah. I didn't even notice until you tried again.
I won't go there. As I think about this legislation, Representative Nornes, it strikes me that local school districts decide for school-related activities whether to use the school district fleet or to purchase the services of a private provider. And your bill seems to impose a higher standard of safety on the private provider as opposed to the school district fleet, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but would you care to comment on that?
Representative Nornes.
Well, first of all, a lot of school districts don't have a fleet. So in my particular case, my school district contracts for all of their buses, school buses and motor coaches. So the intent wasn't to create the situation that you're talking about. Again, my intention was not to go to the school bus issue. To begin with, we looked at Texas. Texas has passed legislation recently that incorporates all buses, school buses, motor coaches, all of them. That was way, that's a lot further than I cared to go at this time. And that also got into school funding issues because you'd have to fund the retrofitting of those school buses and the rest of it. Again, I didn't want to go there. So, I mean, it is an issue, but the schools do have a choice of which mode of transportation they care to use. And I'm not telling them which way they have to go, but if it's a motor coach. And it can be explained by, again, people in the audience that the school bus is technically a safer, stronger vehicle than a motor coach. They're built differently. And so the school bus can take more of an impact than a motor coach can.
All right, I think we have more questions, but I think it will be helpful if we do bring up the testifiers, and then we can get back to questions. So we have, is Carrie, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, it's my constituent, T-H-O-L-K-E-S, Golkes here. She did not end up arriving. Okay, well, she was my constituent who emailed me this morning and felt strongly that this was a good bill, so I'll just say that for her. James Canine, if he is here. Yep. And this is, he is the president of the Lorenz Bus Service, so we look forward to your testimony. There have been questions about your position on this. You can restate your name and title for the record.
My name is Jim Canine. I'm the president and co-owner of Lorenz Bus Service. The bill as amended, I don't really have any objections to relative to putting seat belts, or I should say shoulder harnesses, on motor coaches manufactured after a certain date. We feel pretty strongly that the industry is headed that way, both for school buses and for motor coaches, and we're going to buy all our new coaches with shoulder harnesses integrated into the seats. I strongly oppose any retrofitting because I just think our coaches could only have lap belts for our newer ones, and I'm not so sure how safe those are in the event of a rollover or something like that. So I'm supportive, and we're supportive of new equipment being equipped with shoulder harnesses. And we believe in giving people a choice. I wouldn't be in favor of regulation that required us to make sure that every person had their seatbelt on. But I do believe in giving people a choice. I think there's thoughts on both sides, which I've kind of outlined in my letter, that there are some safety positives and some safety negatives relative to evacuating buses. If everybody is wearing a seatbelt, takes more time. In the event of a fire, you might have a real serious problem. I mean, we had a situation in August where we had 50 people on a bus out in Colorado. It happened to be senior citizens, and there was a leak in the coolant. We went into a dealer and had it fixed, but it created another problem. And as a result, 35 miles from the dealer, the bus caught on fire. And our driver was able to evacuate. Our driver and the escort were able to evacuate everybody safely, and our driver was able to get the fire put out. I don't know if he could have done that if he had to worry about 50 people with seatbelts on. That's just kind of some food for thought. Relative to this particular accident, it's a pretty sad situation, but I think that there's another subject here, and that is hours of service, driver qualifications, and that type of thing. And I would be strongly supportive of efforts to educate school districts and educators on what hours of service requirements are and help them in understanding what is proper planning of a trip and that sort of thing. We, as a matter of policy, as a number of my competitors do also, is a trip like this would have had two drivers on it and probably would have had a berth. And we would have alternated drivers every 4 hours to try to be safer. So I think this is an area where I would be very supportive of something to educate school districts. You know, saving $1,000 on the second driver is not always worth it.
Thank you very much. Michael Moran. Welcome, and if you could state your name and title for the record.
Yes, thank you. My name is Michael Moran. I represent the Minnesota Charter Bus Operators Association, an organization of roughly 40 independent motor coach operators throughout the state of Minnesota. Most of the representatives' amendments took care of a lot of the issues that we had with this bill. However, it should be noted that there is a push on the federal level to get seatbelts in motor coaches. In December of 2007, there was crash testing done with the National Highway Safety Administration by the Transportation Resource Board with the express purpose of developing standards for seatbelts in motor coaches. I believe they used 17 dummies, crash test dummies, and a whole bunch of monitors to do this. As it stands right now, our only issue with this bill would be we would urge some caution and possibly waiting for a national standard to come out. Like I said, there's a huge push by the federal highway folks, and also the National Transportation Resource Board has made it a priority to get seatbelts on school buses. As Jim mentioned, this is coming down the road. Whether it'll be here by 2012, I would guess that yes, it will be, but I don't know that for sure. My recommendation, let's wait until we find a full national standard to make sure we put the safest system we can in for students.
Thank you very much. And apparently my constituent has arrived. Carrie, are you here? There, good. We'll take your testimony and then we'll go back and see if we have at least one more legislator that has a question.
Sorry, I was on a tour of the tunnels.
Oh, it's hard to get around here. Well, welcome, and if you could state your name, because I wasn't sure if I was pronouncing your last name right, and then give us your testimony.
Focus. It rhymes with focus. My name is Carrie Focus, and I am a resident of Minnie's in Northeast Minneapolis, St. Anthony School District 282. And I've been fortunate enough to be a child passenger safety technician for the last 4 years. And I teach car seat classes to Hennepin County foster parents at least once a month. And every time I teach my car seat classes and I talk about the traffic fatalities and difficulties children have with transportation, inevitably a parent asks me, why aren't there seat belts on school buses? And for years I have answered the standard reply, well, school buses are safe because they're big and yellow. Our communities know about school buses, our states have laws relating to driving around with school buses, and they have this feature called compartmentalization, which has been around since 1977 and has been looked at and said to be effective. They've implemented higher backs to the seats and on with my answers, which seemed to satisfy myself and the people I would teach. Until last summer, when I was driving with my aunt down by Hastings, Minnesota, and I saw something ahead of me that looked like a school bus, but it was kind of off to the side. And as we got closer to this vehicle on the road, it was actually a school bus being towed on a flatbed. And I had my digital camera, and I took some pictures of it, and was able to look up online the school district that that school bus belonged to, and it was the Cottonwood bus. And I thought, wow, you know, a school bus like that just doesn't appear in front of me with my digital camera and another person in my vehicle that could use it to take the picture while I'm driving, because mm-hmm. I would never do that. Mm-hmm. And so that has kind of led me on this journey to research school buses and their safety. And I believe that the people of Minnesota want what's best for our children, want what's best for their safety, and you as the Education Finance Committee are charged with doing that. And you have before you a bill that will allow you to put seatbelts on motor coaches used as school buses. And I think that's wonderful, but I want to see the wording state 3-point seatbelts. I don't want there to be lap belts available. There is much research and data out there stating that they are ineffective, that they may cause more harm than good. And I don't think that you can wait for federal legislation or others to run with this before you go, because we are Minnesota. We are known to do what's right. We have led the nation in traffic safety in the past, and we have let that fall by the side, and I would like to see that come back. In my letter to Ms. Greeling yesterday, I stated, with the peanut recall and all of the press that Minnesota received, it was absolutely fantastic to see and hear what our government has done right. And I would like to see and hear the Transportation Committee, the K-12 Finance Committee, do this right and get the seatbelts on the school buses.
Thank you very much, Ms. Focus, for coming down. I appreciate it. She emailed me yesterday, and I assumed she wanted to testify, and she said she was just emailing, but then she said, well, on second thought, she would come and testify. So we always appreciate it when a citizen makes time to come down and give his testimony, and for you to be involved, seeing the tragedy and then acting on it is to be commended. So thank you very much.
I'm happy to do whatever you need, be a resource for getting this bill passed and through.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
And now we'll go back to legislators' questions. We have Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Nornes, this is a wonderful bill, and I'm very supportive of it. I do have a question, though, and it really probably is not for you. Mr. Crow has been gone for a long time, and so maybe I should direct it at him to see if he's still sharp.
probably not.
There's on line 2.21, it says, when the vehicle is used to transport pupils to or from a school as defined in section 128.22, and I have the statute there, and it says that this is transporting school means a public school as defined in 128.5, or a non-public school, church, or religious organization, or home school in which a child is provided instruction in compliance with this section. How far does this, the language of Representative Nornes's bill go to meet these other entities that are mentioned in the statute?
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, Representative Swells, the Second Amendment of Representative Nornes is removed.
She's had a couple of amendments, so it sounds looks like Mr. Kelly's helping answer your question.
Yeah.
Representative Swells, anything else?
No, perhaps those amendments will answer that.
And then I wonder if there's anyone here, my constituent asked a question about what would be an approved lap belt and an approved lap and shoulder belt. Is there anyone here from the State Patrol who could help us out, as long as you are so kindly here, with that question? Welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Tanner Eckhart. I'm the commander with the State Patrol, and I also serve in the Office of Super Transportation Safety that was created last year. And just a couple of items, if I could bring it to your attention. First of all, to answer your constituent's question, as you well noted in your resource material there, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration promulgated rules to require seatbelts on certain school buses beginning in 2011, and also changed some seat standard requirements, which go into effect this year, and also the standards on those lap and shoulder restraints that will be used with those seats. And of course, one of the seat standards, or two of them, are the seat back heights and also the seat sizes, and of course the seat latches that are on the cushions of the seats to make sure that those seats are properly secured when children sit in them. We also submitted a report that we require, as part of the Office of Pupil Transportation Safety, we required to submit a report back to this body, the state legislature, with recommendations, legislative recommendations. And one of those legislative recommendations that we made as the department was to incorporate the use of lap and shoulder restraints on all school buses used in Minnesota in accordance with the federal rule by 2011, and not just the type A1 buses that were talked about in their original rule. They, in our eyes, they went right to the edge of the diving board and said, we want them in the little buses, but we'll leave it up to the states to decide whether or not to put them in the larger buses. So I guess the federal folks, our federal colleagues, handed that off to the state legislature to make that decision. The other item I wanted to bring to your attention is on line 2.22, where it talks about number one, school or school district. And in our eyes, this would allow school districts to operate motor coaches. And we did visit with Representative Nornes about, you know, the concern about if at all possible we could transport kids in school buses, and we understand that these long trips that charter buses are used, or motor coaches for that matter, are used, and they do charter those. But at this point in time, school districts do not operate motor coaches. They generally, if they're going to use one, they charter it from a company that does have the bus. And I don't know if that's something that this committee wants to do, is to allow schools to operate motor coaches.
Thank you very much. So maybe that is something that we still need to work on, Representative Nornes.
I'd be willing to do that.
Yep. Very good. Well, if we could do it right now, if Mr. Strom, it sounds like he's ready, and we'll see how that fits with the author's desires and the committee. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, as the State Patrol mentioned, the point here is that the current law prohibits school districts from owning or operating a motor coach. And so in addition to the amendment that Representative Nornes said earlier on line 2.22, if the words from the clause 1 were stricken, so strike everything after the by and before someone, to simply strike the school or a school district, because they by definition cannot operate a school motor coach, because that's prohibited elsewhere in Chapter 169.
So, Representative Nornes?
I'm fine with that if you want to move that as an amendment.
All right. I would move that oral amendment. Does anyone have any discussion or questions on it? We could have Mr. Strom repeat it just so everyone's clear what it is.
Madam Chair?
Representative Van Zeld.
I've become unclear again. Does this, again, impose one standard for private purchase of service motor vehicles as opposed to using the fleet that the district possesses?
Mr. Strong, can you help us out?
Madam Chair, Representative Antle, I think the standard would be the same for all motor coaches used for school activities, and by definition, a school district cannot, by statutory definition, a school district cannot own or operate a motor coach. So if the comparison that you're looking for is motor coaches, all motor coaches are treated the same. If you're thinking, though, about a school district making a decision between using a yellow school bus for transporting kids versus a motor coach for a school-related activity, then there would be a different standard in place, only to the extent that two different vehicles were chosen. If a private contractor offered to use a yellow school bus, a large yellow school bus, or the district did, they'd be treated the same. So this is applying uniformly to all motor coaches, but a school district, as I say, is prohibited currently from owning or operating a motor.
Thank you very much, and thank you for helping me with the word motor coach.
Members, a lot of times the transportation issues, even though they affect schools, are done in the transportation committee. But now that we've learned our lesson with Type 3 buses, we're keeping them in our committee. The transportation committee may want to view them, but we're not going to let them have us have all these calls all fall for what they did. We're going to be responsible for anything we do in our own area ourselves. Mr. Strom, could you please repeat the amendment, and then we'll see if anyone has further questions before we vote on it.
Madam Chair, members, on line 2.22, delete the word one, the school or a school district, comma, or two.
Any questions on that amendment, Representative Benson? On the amendment?
No, not on that. No.
Anybody have a question on the amendment, Representative Anderson, Representative Biskin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the math and physics guy sitting here were wondering if the comma is necessary after the word activity.
The scientists are trying to weigh in on English matters.
Madam Chair, I believe the comma after activities is still necessary. That's setting aside the clause that starts with when on line 2.20.
Good enough for math people. Okay. Any other questions on the amendment? All in favor, then, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The amendment passes, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Benson, and then Anderson, and then we are going to be done with this bill because we have three more bills, members. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a clarification. This bill addresses the seat belt are mandatory on the bus, the charter bus, but if a student chooses not to use that seatbelt, would that be a secondary violation, such as in a car? How would that be different?
Mr. Eckhart, could you help us out with that?
Madam Chair, Representative, present statute is, and of course, this defines a new, what is a school motor coach, but present statute is, as well as I know it, is that if a seatbelt does exist on a school bus and the child happens to sit in that seat, they are required to use that lap and shoulder belt or seatbelt properly. So as defining this as a school motor coach, I guess off the top of my head, I would have to say you're creating kind of a new animal here. And the word school, we would probably lean toward the requirement that if the belt exists, it should be used if the child's sitting in that seat. And there are school buses today that do have seat belts installed, and they are being used in Minnesota.
Representative Anderson.
So again, when the question was raised, whose responsibility is it to make sure that the kids are using them? Is it the driver?
Captain Urquhart.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a very good question. That is posed by all the experts in the industry about who is ultimately responsible. That's one of the challenges. If I could comment on the enforcement, if we did see that the bus was equipped with lap and shoulder belts or seat belts, and they were not being used, we would certainly try to take some type of action to ask the children to please wear them. And, of course, some children are of an age that they might need assistance to wear certain types of belts. So it is a very challenging issue.
Justin Benson.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a quick question about line 1.12. It talks about these coaches, they must be equipped with an approved lap belt or an approved lap and shoulder belt. And I thought I heard some testimony from one of the presenters that there's a problem, safety problem, with having simply a lap belt and not having a lap and shoulder belt installation. I'm just wondering whether or not this is a good idea to have this option. It seems that maybe motor coach companies would find it less expensive to have simply a lap belt, and if that's the case, maybe we have a safety concern.
Captain Urquhart.
Madam Chair, Representative, once again, our federal colleagues, when they promulgated their 152-page rule on seatbelt use in school buses, recognized that three states in this country use lap belts only. They did not come to the point where they were going to, disapprove the use of lap belts only. So they're going to allow those three states to continue using the lap belts, but they strongly recommend, as your constituent stated, the three-point lap and shoulder restraint in complement with what we all know as compartmentalization in a school bus to enhance that safety. So we got Florida and New Jersey and one other state using lap belts only out there, and the U.S. DOT did not want to tell those states that you got to retrofit your entire bus fleet because we're not going to allow those.
Madam Chair.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would like to ask the testifier whether he has a recommendation for the committee concerning whether or not we should have an option for lap belts and not go for lap and shoulder belt installation.
Captain Urquhart, and this is going to be the last question because otherwise we're not going to get through the other bills.
Madam Chair, Representative, in our report back to the legislature, we use the terminology optimum safety environment, and we believe that the three-point lap and shoulder restraint along with the new seat design and maintaining compartmentalization on school buses is the best way to go.
Thank you very much. House File 331, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much to all the testifiers and Representative Nornes.
Thank you very much to the committee, and we'll talk to you again someday.
Very good.
Okay.
We're always glad to see you.
All right. Okay.
Representative Hortman. Welcome to the committee. Do you have a mover of your bill or should I move it?
I have two co-authors for both my bills, so I was hoping
let's
either Representative Dietrich or Representative Ward would move. I would assume we're going to do...
Yeah. So move. Representative Dietrich moves House File 875, and so Representative Hortman is before us. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Both of the bills that I have in front of your committee today address the same issue, and that is safe transportation of children to school. With the budget cutting that sometimes happens when schools have failed levies or when the state isn't able to provide adequate funding for the school district to not make cuts, one of the things they look at is their transportation that they provide to students. Currently, state law requires that school districts transport children in elementary school and secondary school who live 2 miles away or further. So the school district has to incur that expense to transport those children. It's not optional. What House File 875 would do is it would up the requirement for school districts and say you have to transport any child who is kindergarten or elementary who lives 1 mile or further away rather than 2 miles or further away. But so as not to make it an unfunded mandate, it would allow the school district discretionary levy authority to levy the cost for transporting the children who live between 1 and 2 miles. So this wouldn't be that they can levy for their whole transportation budget. It would just be for adding these kids. And the reason why I bring this bill forward, I've brought it forward the 4 years that I've been here. A lot of the families in my district are affected by this problem. We had budget cuts in District 11, Anoka Hennepin, where we could no longer bus the children who lived between 1 and 2 miles. And since they weren't required to, it was just cut, and children could get to school that way if they were driven to school or if they paid to ride the bus. The parents' pick-up drop-off situation is hazardous at our elementary schools, and the idea of having kindergartners walking 2 miles on the types of roads I have in my district is not safe. One of the roads that kindergartners would have to walk 1.99 miles would be across a 4-lane divided highway with stoplights. And it's just not realistic to think a kid was going to walk to school that way. So all the other times I've brought the bill forward, I've had the family and all the children here, but I figured that you've heard the story from the children in prior years, and I didn't think that really adds to the your understanding of the issue. I'm sure you get it. So what I'm trying to do is get kids more bus rides to school, because the safest way for a child to get to school is in a school bus.
Thank you very much. Representative Biskins, and then Representative Anzell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fortman, really quick, has a fiscal note been ordered on this and will be provided to the committee once it's available?
Mr. Crowell.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, and I actually just pulled up the draft fiscal note, which was not completed for committee today, and it's less than what we normally would expect from a fiscal note, so we'd have to do some additional work. They're not, they appear to not be making any assumptions about how much. They just say that it would be local levy. So I will have to have the department do some additional work based on what is in the system at this point.
Thank you, Representative Anzell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hortman, well, it's true that this is a mandate that is funded as compared to an unfunded mandate. It's, of course, funded off the local levy. And I would just suggest to you that property-poor school districts are going to view this as yet another mandate and another hit on already stressed budgets. And I get what you're trying to do. Of course, I support what you're trying to do, but this is yet another hit on poor districts.
Representative Portman.
Madam Chair and Representative Anzels, I agree with you that property tax is not the way to go to fund schools, and that the mandate approach is not the best, which is why I think you'll like House File 896 better, because it's not a mandate. But I wanted to give this committee two flavors of ways to solve this problem as you consider putting together the omnibus finance bill. And I would also be interested in changing whatever we needed to make sure there was no state fiscal impact and that it was only on local property taxes. But we did sort of walk away from property tax funding in 2001 on the theory that the state would keep up its end of the bargain and help school districts meet their expenses. We haven't been doing a very good job of that, and this year it's going to be extremely difficult for us to give school districts what they need to not cut. And so I'm not crazy about the property tax, and there's some other things that I think we should be looking at, but when it's a choice between giving a kid a safe ride to school and increasing the property tax, you know, a couple bucks per household in a school district, to me it's worth it. I know it's a difficult choice.
And, of course, if we were funding the new Minnesota Miracle, then we do have the transportation extra funding in there, which Representative Hortman is, I'm sure, a good supporter of, as we all are, including Representative Garofalo. Is there anyone in the audience who wanted to testify on this bill? Mr. Lundell?
I can wait until after the second bill because my testimony is
Good. Why don't you stay right there, though, and then you'll be first in line. Okay, well, if there aren't any other questions from members or other testimony, we will. House File 875 is moved and will be laid aside for the possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And then, would one of the co-authors of House File 896 care to move that bill? Representative Ward.
Madam Chair, so moved.
Representative Ward moves House File 896, and members, Representative Portman has an amendment. Before we start the discussion, Representative Ward, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I will. I will move H0896 A1 amendment.
Thank you very much. The A1 amendment has been moved, and Representative Portman, what does this amendment do?
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm not really sure, but it was recommended to me that it was required to make some technical correction to the way the bill was originally drafted. It didn't refer to some portion of statute that it needs to refer to.
So it's just a technical amendment.
Yes.
Any questions from members? Okay, the 0896A1 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman.
Well, members, I think maybe you'll like this one better. Between the two, this is my preferred way that if I were on the K-12 committee that I would try to get it in the K-12 omnibus finance bill. What House File 896 does is it allows a school district to define a hazardous transportation area and then levy for providing transportation in those areas. I believe it was in the last session we passed legislation that allows school districts to set up hazardous transportation committees. And so these are school board members, the school transportation official, and parents who will figure out where is it in the areas that the school district is not legally required to transport children, where it's too hazardous for the children to walk because of a four-lane divided highway or another hazard, maybe a railroad crossing that isn't adequately designed for pedestrians. And then the school district could designate those as the hazardous transportation area and levy in its discretion for that transportation expense. And that transportation levy couldn't be more than 30% of the district's total transportation budget. So they couldn't, you know, go out and decide, well, everywhere is hazardous and we're going to start levying for all this and use that money for some other portion of our budget.
Very good. Questions from members? Mr. Lundell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation, and we really do welcome the opportunity to speak on both of these bills. As Representative Greiling said, the basic thrust of House File 896 is in House File 2, where we talk about the hazardous transportation and the funding of that. I think we're sensitive to what Representative Anzels is talking about in terms of the levies. I think, though, that a lot of this boils down to the decision back in 1995, legislative session, to roll transportation in the general ed formula. I cut my teeth in the Senate. It just seems that ever since I left the Senate staff, I've been fighting the Senate. And as soon as I left, they started to do dumb things, I guess. But I guess the thing is with... when we rolled in transportation, many of these things like the hazardous levy, the 1 to 2 mile, those kinds of things were in the transportation formula and called non-regular transportation. When that was all rolled in, some of the districts with higher levels of transportation costs had transition revenue, but that transition revenue has since evaporated. There still is transportation sparsity for districts that are extremely sparse, but for districts that are either in metro or in the exurban suburb, exurban area, outer ring suburbs, where you can see more and more development without sidewalks, without controlled intersections. I think you go to the Minnetonka School District, you've got a school on Highway 5, you've got a school on Highway 7, and if you're within 2 miles of as a high school student or within 1 mile as an elementary student, you're walking. And when you go to pupil, this is now like per pupil as opposed to per pupil transport of the formula. And so if you have declining enrollment, but you can't cut your bus routes, any types of things like that are going to make your transportation costs are not going to be able to be accommodated because the formula is really static. It was done under the name of flexibility, but I counter that this is probably the least flexible way to do with transportation. Districts have very little ability when there's new housing development, when there's new business development, when they close a school, any one of those things could dramatically change the transportation pattern in the district, and the district has no way to accommodate for those changes. So I would, again, really thank Representative Hortman for coming forward with this again, and look forward to working with the committee to find ways to make transportation something that's viewed outside of the 4.85% of the general ed formula and the sparsity formula. I think that there are ways that we really need to really look at transportation again and bolster it. I think that Chuck Holden from Anoka Hennepin always talks about too in the to add about the 1 to 2 mile. When you go to fees for those kids the 1 to 2 mile, you oftentimes you'll have half full buses going by kids who are walking. I mean, in what's up with that? I mean, I think that that's, I think that, that those are the kinds of things that we want to get kids into buses. That's the safest way to get them to school. And I think that right now the system as it works just doesn't accommodate that. If you look at a lot of the referendum levy questions of the last few years, so many of those questions have transportation as one of the portions of that levy question.
whether it's the whole question is going to include transportation costs or one of the four questions will deal with transportation. Many districts have dealt with that. So you're putting transportation up to, you're putting safe transportation up as a vote to people, and in many cases, as Representative Anzalsa talked, you got folks that just can't put forward the $5 a month to do it. And so I think that this is something we need to, really need to look at. The Minnesota Miracle has done that, and I think that hopefully we can, again, push forward with bills of this nature.
Thank you very much, Representative Iskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lundell, who are you here representing again?
Today?
Today.
I'm representing the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lundell, does he have a position on this bill, particularly the levy?
C's position would be that all levies should be equalized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lundell.
Know where this is going.
Madam Chair, I'm used to it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions from members? Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Representative Portman for bringing these two options forward. And I would, I guess, really challenge us to also look at some other options. Rolling the pupil transportation into the formula has caused some issues when the funding formula has been funded inadequately. And just on a now on a side note, when this policy originally came into effect, and many of you are probably thinking, well, my district isn't there, so I'm really glad. But there are 17 school districts throughout the state, the last time I did the count, that are in some level of this situation. They did not need to cut as far as the Anoka-Hennepin School District, so they have some sort of a modified version of this. But anyhow, when we were required to make this level of cut, first of all, it was the parents who said to us, please don't cut our classrooms. And so what we did was, that was the reason we went to transportation, which is cruel as it sounds. And you can, you look at a winter like we just had, and it does really feel cruel to think that some kids at first grade, second grade, third grade are walking a mile and a half to their school in this weather with snowbanks in many cases 6 feet high and with no sidewalks. And that is another thing that has been that has evolved, at least in the suburban community that I am in, is they're not putting sidewalks in anymore because they're too expensive. So this is a really time for us to really take a very serious look at it, and I would definitely agree with Mr. Lundell. Should we think about putting this back to a categorical and having the schools actually look at all of the routes individually for hazardous roads, safe walking paths, the whole conglomerate, because a lot of things have evolved since we made that action or somebody took that action. So thank you.
And just to remind members, the PS Minnesota Coalition did recommend that transportation be a categorical again. And what's in the new Minnesota Miracle is kind of a conglomeration of that recommendation by having new revenue for the maintenance of buses and new revenue for hazardous transportation. There'd be a 25% increase that would be a categorical. So there is that's a partial remedy for that discussion. Anybody else that wants to testify on the bill? Final closing comments, Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I hope that you will seriously consider including this in the omnibus. I know this isn't the ideal approach, and maybe we'll be able to do some component of what's in the Minnesota Miracle, but right now in this deficit environment, we have a whole bunch of really hard and horrific choices in front of us. And I know this is sort of a Band-Aid approach, but it's really important to me that we do what we can to get these little kids not walking 2 miles to school. And this House File 896 gives school districts the choice of whether they want to do it. They're all elected officials, and it doesn't mandate a new requirement. And so every district in the state wouldn't have to do it, just those districts where it's a problem. And I would just echo what Representative Dietrich said. It may not have happened to your school district yet, but if we implement the governor's budget or anything less than that, we know there's going to be a lot of cuts in every school district in this state. And a lot of school districts that don't have restrictive transportation policies are going to be looking at that. And, you know, it might be your first graders and your second graders a year from now that are in this situation.
Thank you very much, Representative Hortman. And House File 896 will be laid all over. Oh, 875, I'm sorry.
No, 896 is the one we're on.
Oh, right. Yeah. I make enough problems for myself without people getting me confused. House File 896 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Representative Mallory. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Mallory, would you like me to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair.
I will move, excuse me, House File 1256 for possible inclusion in the K-12 Omnibus Finance Bill. Representative Mallory, you don't have any amendments, right?
No, Madam Chair. I was told by Mr. Kelly that we need a similar amendment to the last bill, but I haven't had a chance to have it drafted. But since it's being laid over,
you'll have some
that
time.
Can be taken.
Very good. Okay, please tell us about your bill.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree that there's no ideas passed down from God on tablets on how we solve the huge problem on school funding and transportation. But if there is either rolled into the transportation levy or if it's left to school boards to decide to do a hazardous transportation levy, it's really important that the school districts not just consider the type of things that were talked about in the last, such as dangers to kids from buses or running over them or other trucks or problem intersections. In the inner city, there's a whole different real world for youth, and that's the gangs and the drugs and other criminal activities. And Madam Chair, I want to thank you again for graciously coming out to Patrick Henry last year, and with Representative Lynn Carlson, I think both of your eyes were very open to a whole different reality. In fact, he told me that he had taught there about 25 years before, and he had no idea what inner urban school had changed to, and the huge problems that exist there. For instance, we have youth at Patrick Henry and some of the middle schools even that have to walk under the present system through different gang areas on the way home. And just two of them, now we finally shut down the Tray Crips, most of them are in prison, but about a year and a half ago, two of the top three most dangerous gangs in the city were the Tray Crips and the Emerson Murder Boys. Many kids had to walk through that even though they or their brothers or something were in one of a rival gang, and they would have to go back and forth. And as you recall, Madam Chair, the principal at Henry and the police liaison officer said this was one of their biggest problems to getting students to class and able to actually work and get their work done and succeed in school. And so what my bill would do is and I'm sure there's areas now, the south side is starting to have, they've always had problems with the gangs, but they're again starting to have very serious problems. The north side was the first one where the structure of the gangs really broke down, and they just a group would split off and become the most violent so that they could get known. And so that's what's going on the north side, and unfortunately it's starting to happen on the south side even more. And I don't know St. Paul, but I'm sure it's either happening or going to happen. And so when we're talking about hazardous conditions for students getting to class, I just want to make sure that the school board has to take care of students in this really dangerous situation.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Mallory. And I did have a chance to go to the Patrick Henry School with Representative Carlson, and we did hear some firsthand stories from the principal, the teachers, and the police liaison officer.
The principal used to be at St. Cloud Penitentiary.
Well, not like they picked the right principal. Are there any questions from members? Representative Wolfgang.
Madam Chair and Representative Mullery, I want to thank you for bringing this bill and adding this element. Having taught in the middle school the sheet Patrick Henry, I know exactly what you're talking about. Secondarily, if you think that I represent Richfield and mm-hmm. East Bloomington and Central Bloomington, if you think it's not there, you're wrong. My suburb, Richfield, has experienced this, and so has East Bloomington. So it's the same, it's a turf kind of thing, and the lines are drawn, the gangs are different names and different ethnicities, actually, too, and but it's out in first ring suburbs, too. So I think this is much farther reaching than just inner city.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Folkham, I realize that. I think it's a little worse in certain pockets in the city, but it's not just there. Brooklyn Park, a second ring suburb, has huge problems. Many of the same gangs that are in the north side are now forming out in Brooklyn Park. And I've heard Richfield has those problems also. And so, members, I totally agree with Representative Slocum. This is not just an inner city problem. And it's going to be worse in the suburbs.
Everything is a continuum. If nothing, there aren't any sharp lines between any places in the school district. Is there any testimony for or against the bill in the audience? Representative Mullery, did you have any discussions with Minneapolis Public Schools and get any feedback from them on this bill?
No, Madam Chair, I haven't heard anything yet from them.
So no news is good news. We always think. So, all right, well, if there are no questions or no one to testify then, any closing comments, Representative Mullery?
No, just thank you, Madam Chair, again for spending so much time at Henry, and thank the members for consideration.
And thank you, and House File 1256 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, sorry that I cut off Representative Benson when he was trying to ask more questions on Representative Norness's bill, because I thought we had to rush along. How was I to know nobody had any questions on the last three bills, only the first?
Yes.
So sorry about that.
Fine.
Members, the meeting is adjourned.